Welcome everyone to the Middle East Forum conference call. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. Today our speaker is Mr. Lawrence Solomon. Mr. Solomon is an energy expert and environmentalist and the founder and managing director of Energy Probe Research Foundation in Toronto. Among the foundation's goals are promoting social, economic, and environmental well-being in Canada and abroad. Mr. Solomon is also an author and journalist who will today be offering his remarks on a subject he's written extensively about, Israel's discovery of energy reserves, how it's impacted the region, and affected the global geopolitical balance. Mr. Solomon?
Thank you, Marilyn. I'd first like to take us back to 1973, the time of the first OPEC oil crisis, or as it was known at the time, the OPEC oil embargo. My point in doing this is to explain in concrete terms the role of energy in fostering hostility to Israel. Prior to the 1973 OPEC oil embargo, Israel was generally well-liked, not among the Arab countries, but in most of the world. This included the Western media and the left. Oil was cheap, $2 a barrel, and the Arab countries were generally seen in a negative light, as belligerent military dictatorships. Israel, in contrast, was a small, socialist, democratic country. It no longer garnered sympathy as an underdog because of its success in the Six-Day War, but Israel was still widely admired. Jews and non-Jews alike in the West happily sent their kids to kibbutzes. Israel also had good relations with African countries. Starting in 1958, Israel ran a foreign aid program geared to helping black Africa by transferring agricultural and water technologies. Israel, in fact, became the world's second largest per capita donor of foreign aid, even though Israel itself was quite poor. All that goodwill changed with the 1973 Yom Kippur War, in which Israel was attacked by Egypt and Syria. In planning for this war, Saudi Arabia agreed to help by using the oil weapon. This was an embargo of oil shipments to the West. This embargo led to a quadrupling of oil prices that hit Western consumers at the gas pumps and in their home heating bills. For the first time, there was a financial price to pay in the West for support of Israel. Almost immediately, the left turned against Israel. At the same time, the Palestine Liberation Organization, which until then was reviled for its airplane hijackings and other acts of terrorism against Western targets, for the first time the PLO became praiseworthy. In just 1 year, PLO leader Yasser Arafat was invited to address the United Nations General Assembly in New York. One more year, and the UN General Assembly branded Zionism as a form of racism. Black Africa also turned on Israel. The Arabs gave Black Africa a choice. The Arabs said, cut off relations with Israel, or we'll cut you off oil just as we cut off the West. And almost en masse, African countries cut off relations with Israel and formed an Islamic African voting bloc, buttressed with other so-called non-aligned nations that would then vote against Israel at every turn in the United Nations. The oil multinationals, too, did their part to hurt Israel. They wanted to ingratiate themselves with the Arabs who were talking about nationalizing the multinationals' assets. The multinationals argued, and they did this publicly, for example, in New York Times ads, they argued that the West had far greater interests in a secure oil supply than in a tiny patch of land without oil called Israel. So these are the main factors that led Israel to become rebranded as a pariah state. The oil weapon, more than anything, did Israel in, both in public opinion in the West and diplomatically among nations. I believe that in the next 1 to 2 decades, the Muslim nations will lose the oil weapon, and with it, they'll lose their diplomatic clout. And this is because the world will be awash in energy, and because energy prices will collapse. You've all heard of shale gas and fracking. This is a new technology that allows vast new amounts of natural gas to be developed. the U.S. is bringing so much of this shale gas onto the market that prices have halved compared to what they were a few years ago. Instead of building ports to import natural gas, the U.S. is now planning to use those ports to export its natural gas surplus. Canada, of course, is already a major natural gas exporter. Likewise, shale oil is being developed in the U.S., which also has immense amounts of this oil, several Saudi Arabia's worth. Canada and Mexico also have large amounts of oil. North America can easily become energy independent within a decade, as Mitt Romney had promised, although this is less likely now under Obama. But even under Obama, oil shale is booming, and it will be pushing oil prices down. More importantly, shale gas and shale oil are found throughout the world, in South America, in Russia, in China, in Africa, and Europe. Shale gas will generally be the first to be developed. Europe especially has vast amounts of easily recoverable shale gas in the UK, in Poland, in France, and Ukraine. We'll see a lot of fracking in Europe, which is now dependent on Russia. We'll also see a lot of conventional natural gas developed in the Mediterranean by Greece and Cyprus. And this is where Israel comes in. Israel also has large amounts of natural gas and probably oil in the Mediterranean, in waters adjacent to the Cyprus waters. Israel and Cyprus are developing their resources together, and they are also allied for another reason. Turkey claims oil and gas off both Cyprus and Greece, and Turkey has threatened war with both of these countries if they develop their resources. Israel thus has value to Cyprus and Greece as not only as a commercial partner, but also as a military ally, since Turkey is less likely to confront the Greeks and the Cypriots if that means tangling with Israel's military. This protective relationship has warmed Israel's relations with Cyprus and Greece, which both used to be quite hostile to Israel. Once Israeli gas, in partnership with gas from Cyprus and perhaps Greece, start flowing into Europe, other European countries and their populations will also warm to Europe. These gas exports to Europe will have another effect too. They will stymie plans to pipe gas from the Muslim Middle East to Europe. Instead of Europe becoming reliant on the Muslim nations for gas, they will be reliant on Israel, and they will be much more self-sufficient. And now, Israel appears to be getting another partner in its gas fields, and this partner has perhaps even greater geopolitical ramifications. This partner is likely to be Gazprom Israel, which is a subsidiary of Russia's Gazprom, the world's largest gas producer and the supplier of 25% of Europe's needs. Many companies are rumored to have bid for a stake in Israel's offshore energy resources. And among the bidders, Western oil companies are involved, and these are the same companies that used to be afraid of being seen to be in bed with Israel. And among the companies rumored to be involved in these biddings is Francis Total and U.S. multinationals such as ExxonMobil and Chevron. Israel's gas, which is estimated to be worth perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars, has made Israel an acceptable partner in the eyes of Western oil multinationals. But nevertheless, Israel prefers Russia's Gazprom for geopolitical reasons. For one thing, Russia has a military presence in the Mediterranean, and Russia is a historic rival of both Turkey and Iran. With Russia a partner in Israel's Mediterranean oil and gas, Israel's enemies will think twice about sabotaging Israel's oil and gas fields. And for another matter, Israel and Russia have growing military ties, and in recent years, Russia has agreed to Israel's request to withhold arms sales to Syria and Iran. Putin is also not likely to agonize over an Israeli decision to preemptively strike Iran. As Putin told Spain's former prime minister a few years ago, don't worry, we can sell them everything, even if we are worried about an Iranian nuclear bomb, because at the end of the day, Putin said, Israel will take care of it. So far, I've mainly discussed natural gas, but the oil picture is also very promising for Israel. Thanks to shale oil, the U.S. has become the world's fastest growing oil and gas producer, and it's already a net petroleum product exporter. After the U.S., China has the world's largest amounts of shale oil. China, which is now a major importer, may become an exporter itself. And after China, Israel comes next with an estimated 500 billion barrels of oil. This isn't offshore oil in the Mediterranean. This is oil, shale, or oil on Israel, on Israeli land. There's 250 billion barrels of it in one basis alone near Jerusalem. And to get an idea of what 250 billion barrels is, well, that's comparable to the amount of oil left in Saudi Arabia. This Israeli oil is now being developed, and it should begin to produce oil in commercial quantities perhaps in a decade, and perhaps at $30 a barrel, which makes it profitable. This Israeli technology, along with American shale oil technology, will then be exportable to other countries which can develop their own shale oil resources. So all told, there are 38 countries in every continent in the world that have something like 5 trillion barrels of shale oil. Every region of the world has the wherewithal to become energy self-sufficient. The oil dominance of the Middle East will be ending over the next 10 to 20 years, I believe. And once the Muslim Middle East loses its oil leverage, most of the countries in the Muslim Middle East will also lose their diplomatic clout. Time, in other words, is on Israel's side. Israel's short-term outlook may be perilous because Iran is building a bomb and because Israel's peace with Egypt is now in doubt. But if Israel can get through these next few years safely, the future looks much, much more secure. So that's the end of my formal remarks, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solomon.